Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Nation Villain Presents the Naked Woman. This is your engineer right here, DJ Black Caesar. Your host is Miss Gidget Aziza, Queen of the Maryland Mohammed. What's up, lady? Are you out there? What's up?
Yes, DJ Black Caesar, even though you messed up my name, I'm here.
Oh, wow. Hey, you know what? I'm looking at it. I'm like, wow, what did I just say? I mean, I just said her name completely wrong. Is it Queen Aziza Maryland Mohammed?
It is Queen Aziza Maryam Mohammed.
Maryam Mohammed. Man, you know what? I never knew your name was Maryam. What does that stand for?
It means mother.
Great, great. Okay. I'm going to let you get on with your show now, so go ahead and take it away.
Thank you, DJ Black Caesar. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, and I greet all of you, the listening audience, as well as my distinguished panel, and I greet in words of peace. As-salamu alaykum. And it is my distinct... thank you. And it's my distinct honor and pleasure to present to you my returning panelist, Brother Gary Mahatma Muhammad from Chicago, Illinois, as well as student minister Troy Muhammad from our historical mile number one in Detroit, Michigan. Let me just, before we get started, I want to kind of remind people that this is a show that we attempted to do a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, due to some technical difficulties with Blog Talk, we were not able to complete our show. And so by popular demand from all of you who listen to the show online and via telephone, we are bringing back the show to conclude it. So let me remind the listening audience, let me remind the panelists, if you have your computers on or if you are speaking on speakerphone, please kind of turn those items off because we're getting feedback on the line. And I don't know where it's coming from, but I can hear myself. So we want to make sure that we, you know, don't distort the sound because we want everybody to be heard clearly. And I want to thank all of you who have so graciously joined us in the chat room as well as those of you who have joined us by telephone. If you can tell I'm nervous, I'm always nervous, but hey, whatever. And so at this time, I want to allow Student Minister Troy, if you would, come down front and center, soldier, and present yourself and tell us something about yourself before we get started.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I want to first thank you for the invitation, and I want to thank you for inviting us back. We had a wonderful conversation last week, and I really appreciated the feedback from the listening audience as well as the panelists, and it was a wonderful discussion. My name is Brother Troy Muhammad, and I'm currently serving as Student Minister of Muhammad's Mosque Number 1, assisting Student Minister Rasul Muhammad. I've been a follower of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad for almost 20 years now. I'm married, and I have 4 children, 3 of which are daughters. So this discussion is very important to me. So thank you, sister.
And thank you. Thank you, Brother Troy. And Brother Gary Mahatmas Muhammad, come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Gary Mahatmas Muhammad. I've been in the Nation of Islam since 1998. After falling head over heels in love with the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, his faith and his voice, it led me to study the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan a lot more closer, which eventually led me to the study of Master Farad Muhammad. So that's been about close to about 14 or 15 years now that I've been studying Islam. Born and raised in the suburbs of Chicago, Joliet, Illinois, newlywed, married man with 3 children, student of metaphysics, and a student of metaphysics for about 13 or so years with the addition of Islam. So with that family, I love you all, and I pray and hope that we have a very, in-depth and intelligent dialogue in regards to a very situation that is plaguing the black family, black man and the black woman. Thank you.
Yes, son. Thank you, Brother Gary. And also with us, we are have the distinct honor and pleasure to have with us Student Minister James Muhammad out of Capitol, Florida. I know he gonna get me, but I told him I would bring him in if I saw him out there, so he should be prepared. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Student Minister James Muhammad.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Bridget, and to your distinguished panelists. Well, you all should know that when my brothers, particularly Student Minister Troy, is representing the message, I'm always going to, if Allah blesses me, to be there to support. I don't intend to speak Sister Gidget, that I won't ask any questions or make any comments other than those that I'm going to make right now, which is I greatly admire both of your panelists. And I want to encourage them in their work and in their commitment to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and facilitate the rise of fallen humanity in the mission of the resurrection of the dead. So go ahead, Brother Troy. Go ahead, Brother Gary. May Allah bless you this evening and continue to bless you. I'll be listening. As-salamu alaykum.
Yeah, okay, he'll be listening. Okay, your mic is open. I'm just going to say that. Yes, sir. We're going to pick up where we left off, and I know that we kind of talked about, you know, the origin of this topic, and I shared with the listening audience on last time that I was quite taken aback when my experience in the grocery store with a child that was all of 12 years of age, who was clad almost barely, you know, her. And like I said last time, her underwear was longer than the shorts that she had on. She was in the company of her mother. And I heard her mother say to her that, oh, hold this stuff. I have to go get your father some razors. Now, just the fact that she had a father at home and the way she was dressed, it floored me, you know, because I remember being 8, 9, 10 years of age. I couldn't step out on the porch without my headpiece, let alone with my back or my backside out. And so, you know, it just really kind of called to my attention, you know, what are we teaching our daughters? You know, what is our mindset as mothers? When did it become appropriate for our children, even us, to come out of doors in such a fashion? And we talked about, you know, society and how people dress and, you know, the media and where they're getting this impression from. But when she said, I have to go get your father some razors, whether he was in the house, outside of the house, at some point he was incorporated into her life, whatever, you know, whatever his demographic was. And I'm just not understanding, where is the head of the men today? What are they thinking to even allow our children, and especially our girls, to be dressed that way? So we're going to pick up where I think we left off, about the moral authority of men. And I'm going to start with you, Brother Minister Troy. You know, have men lost their moral authority, and how did that happen?
A very serious question, and I think it's a long answer, and maybe Brother James can chime in and help us with that answer at a certain point. However, when you talk about moral, it's pertaining to the principles of right and wrong. Has the man lost his moral authority? We can see some instances where he shows respect for his mother, he shows respect for his grandmother, his sister, but loses it when it comes to all women in general. This is a reflection sometimes of the society. This is the cutoff or shutoff point where he just doesn't see women in general as objects that should be respected. We talked about it last week, how the biblical scripture teaches that man is the head of woman and Christ is the head of man. So he loses his moral authority when he doesn't have Christ, or he doesn't have God as his head. He has to go to the author of authority, who is God, in order to have real authority. In this society, he exerts physical authority. So he beats a woman and he forces a woman to do things that he may want her to do. But if he doesn't have the knowledge of God, he's not equipped to guide and maintain the woman of God. So he loses more authority if he doesn't have Allah God in his life as his head and as his source. Therefore, the woman is running rampant. He's running rampant. The community is down. So it's not just that the man has lost more authority, but since the man isn't connected to God and he's at the head of this thing, the entire community has lost all moral respect as well as authority, because each person would have a moral authority to themselves. But since you don't have the right head in charge, you know, all types of foolishness has come in. All types of sickness has come in. So the moral standard of the entire community is dropped because the man hasn't taken his place with God as his head.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And Brother Gary, can I get your take on that?
Yes. I hope all of the listening audience took the time to listen to the previous show that we did last week. And I'm going to try to touch on it a little bit more about the man and moral authority. When you look at morals is what we will call a set of standards, laws, or principles by which a person governs his life. And the standard that has been set for humanity is righteousness. But when the man has not lived a life that is reflective of righteousness, which should be in line with the morals, where his morals should be in line with righteousness, then he has lost the right to govern over that which God has given him. If the man is the head of woman, and the woman is the head of the children, and these things have been set up by God to produce what we will call a harmonious society, then the question that has to be posed is, how is it that man has become what we will call disconnected from God? That is, and that's really what it is. That the man has become so disconnected from God that he has not reflected God in his morals. He has not reflected God in his life. And as a result, he has now nullified his right to exercise power and authority over the woman, power and authority over his children, and power and authority over creation. And you can see it there. But to make it real short, yes, he has lost all authority. And if he doesn't get himself right and get it right fast, he will never exercise authority like that ever again over anything in creation until he gets it right.
That's right.
Yes, sir. And Brother James, Brother Troy asked that you
expound. Oh, you're going to use my name to get him in there.
Well, you did call his name, so Brother James.
Brother James.
Yes, I'm listening, and don't let a play you like that, brother. But listen, I let me just share with you all my position. You know, I've been in the ministry for quite some time, and one of my greatest loves in the ministry is to see students in the ministry blossom and grow and develop. You know, I love to do that. And so that's why I like to listen, literally. That's why I like to listen. But I'll just comment on what is being said. You know, as Brother Troy says so wonderfully, it is a matter of right and wrong. And the law of any society is carried by the behavior, practices, administration, and organization of that society in the man and by the man. I want to make it plain, dear family, particularly to my sisters and women who may be listening. Islam does not elevate the man in terms of power or in terms of value over the woman. Allah says in the Quran, O mankind, reverence your guardian Lord who created you from a single being, and reverence the wounds that bore you. That word reverence, so teaches the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is defined as respect, but tinged with awe and worship. And in fact, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, if there were no other entity or creature or being, if there was no God, rather, let me say it correctly, the only other entity or being that would be worthy of worship is the woman. So our statements regarding the woman, yes, she has a responsibility. Yes, she standardizes how people look at the level and define and measure the level of civilization based on how she comports herself or conducts herself in public and also in private. However, the man, once he falls, then everything falls. And what has to happen is that a woman has to be specially prepared to produce a woman that will, to produce a man that will ultimately become the resurrected standard of what she, as a woman, can now follow and manifest and express her nature under his guidance and under his leadership and under his example. So did we lose our moral authority? Yes, we lost our moral authority, and even better, it was taken. More to the point, it was taken, because you cannot be in a situation for centuries wherein you are forced to neglect the children that you produce, have no control over your women, just made to go into her and produce more babies, because the babies were looked at as product. The babies were looked at as more slaves to make more work or to make more money off of. The enemy has a nerve, and always we got to talk about his culpability and his responsibility in this. The enemy has a nerve to condemn the black man. Yes, he's negligent. Yes, we are irresponsible. But he has not the moral authority or the moral position to condemn us for that irresponsibility, to condemn us for our immorality, because he made us that way. He created the situation wherein a black man had no control over his woman whatsoever for a period of centuries. He made black men baby-making machines, and the genetic residual effects is what he now is being plagued with. He created the monster, and now the monster is eating him up. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, will reform the black man back to where he was. But don't ever think that the enemy's hands are clean. And whenever we get to judgment of a condition of a people, we just can't deal with branch knowledge, that is to say the effects. We have to go to cause. So, yes, we've lost our moral authority, and the only way we will get it back is in a society of our own, in a land of our own, with our own laws, our own leadership, our own rule, our own mastery and control and discipline of ourselves and our nation. So I'll stop right there. Thank you, Brother Troy. Thank you, Sister Gidget.
Thank you.
Yes.
Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you. And you know, now here is my thing, and Brother James is absolutely right, because that is one of the effects of slavery, of how you know, we were conditioned, you know, to look down on our men. You know, there are many things that are discussed during slavery, but that process of how we as women began to look at our men as being less than or not having that ultimate respect for them, a lot of it did not just come from the brutality of them being, you know, whipped half to death in front of their women, in front of their children, and how they, you know, were made to be in servitude to the white man, but also what men in particularly don't want to talk about and what white people will not even allow in the history books is the rape and emasculation of men on the plantation, because men on the plantation, depending on what slave master you got, a lot of men were raped in front of their women, and right. That in itself will take, you know, you down a notch, so to speak, in the eye of the woman. And so as it is true today, you might not be raped in a sexual way, but you are constantly, constantly raped of your essence, of who you really are, by the policies and procedures that is going on against the black men in America. But at some point, you know, we've had these teachings in America amongst us for over 80 years now. And even in the Bible, for my Christian audience who I know is listening, who oftentimes thinks that what we're talking about is strictly for Muslims, no, it's not. This, we're talking about God-given moral authority to men. Men have to take a responsibility. They have to come back to their essence. If men are the maintainers of women, then they have to let the Christ be the maintainers of them. And it's all about the will. And if the men don't have the will to allow Christ to maintain them or to even try to be one in alignment with Allah, then all of your women and all of your daughters are going to hell in this society, because now the white man is the one that has the moral authority over her. And so my sisters who have this mindset that, you know, a black man can't do nothing for you because you're educated and because you have money and because this, that, and the other, whatever has been put in your mind to make you think you don't need this black man, I'm telling you, in a minute, I'm going to show you what your white slave master is going to do to you, because he can't take care of his own. So certainly, our black women who are in corporate America, who have been, you know, stripped of the essence of who they are and who their black man is, it's going to be a very different day in a minute. So we have the responsibility to tell our people the truth. And the truth of the matter is that they have used black women in particularly to degrade the black man. And you don't even know you're being used. And so I want to start with you again, Brother Troy. When we talk about this pattern, how did it begin? You know, to me, in my lifetime, you know, I must say that when the woman started to go out into the workforce, starting to work for this white man, and there was a standard, and there was an atmosphere that was created for her. And as the years have gone by, you know, the clothing requirement became less and less. And that's my opinion. But I'm going to ask you, Brother Troy, where did all this really, really begin?
Well, I do think that you touched on it, as well as Brother James touched on it, and we began with a people robbed of our name, our religion, our culture, our God. So the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad comes to take us, as Minister Farrakhan has said, back to where we belong. And as you said earlier, it's not a Muslim message, but it's a message for righteous people. It's a message for those who want better. And I do believe that's where it began, but then it developed, you know, as the people developed. I think that you had a period in time where, you know, after the civil rights struggle, and, you know, our people were, they were seemingly more unified at that time because they knew what side of the line that they were on. You know, separation was promoted amongst the Caucasians in America. So black people were on one side and Caucasians were on the other. And we started our own businesses. We did for self. We did what we had to do. And we were able to form a lot of black businesses and strong black organizations. Then it came a period after civil rights legislation was passed, you know, and some of the white businesses were forced to hire black people, hire minorities. And by hiring a black person and a woman, it allowed them to hire two minorities, you know, and hiring one person. They could say we hired a female and we hired a black person, you know, and this began, you know, our sisters getting better jobs than some of our brothers. And that's not all in, true in all cases, but it has been true. If we talk about today, I run a company now, and I've been running it for now maybe 15 years. And I hire a lot of brothers who come out of prison. And oftentimes, you know, the brother will get out of prison, and he's labeled with this felony, and he gets with his girlfriend or his wife, and, you know, the system doesn't work to help him at all. So it's usually a sister who will call me and ask, you know, are you guys hiring? Can you get my boyfriend or my husband a job? And, you know, then she has to get this guy out of prison who they gave nothing, you know, to help him once he got out. She has to get this man and clothe him and feed him and usually have him living in her house, and then she brings him to the job and has to drive him back and forth to work. And I noticed that she's sincere in trying to help her brother, and he's sincere in trying to, you know, turn his life around. But after her having to do this for so long, you know, it does cause her to lose a level of respect for him, because he's not in his proper position. And this is how, like you said, the system, the current system is set up. It's not that the Caucasian or the white male has the moral authority, but based upon the world, the society that he's created, you know, based upon not righteous principles, but unrighteous principles, he has the tools that gives him authority, you know. And so we look, and we consider, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us, that the Caucasian was half-dressed, living in the caves and hillsides of Europe, and that we had to civilize them, clothe them, teach them how to cook their food. This is a fact. So that has been their way. And our people here in America, as we are taught by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, for the most have been deaf, dumb, and blind. And we are taught to love our enemies and hate ourselves. So we haven't demonstrated a self-love in all of this. I mean, when you start seeing in the society, the whites with everything, you know, and the society teaches you against yourself, you start to hate yourself, you know. And it's a terrible thing to see a beautiful young woman, a beautiful young sister, but no men looking in her direction, you know. They look at the other girls, the girls long hair, blonde hair, blue eyes. They're looking at the woman who's half-dressed. And so this beautiful sister who's not half-dressed, who's not getting looked her way, she starts revealing herself because that gets her attention in this society, you know, from the sick man. You know, and then she continues to undress herself, trying to attract the attention. So yeah, now we're on the level of animals, you know, because intellect and personality and spirit is no longer a factor. And unfortunately, by the time our young women realize this, they've been so misused and abused you know, that it's hard to come back. It's hard to come back from it.
Okay. Yes, sir. And Brother Gary, your take on that?
Yeah, repeat the question one more time for me, please.
I just want to know in your thought, how did all of this begin? Where did all this really begin?
I can take you back 66 trillion years ago, but I won't go that far. I'll take it right back to after the blacks were brought into the Caribbean, as Minister Fairclough taught us, and the white man began to, how can I put it, he began to rape and insert himself inside of the black woman. Black people have not understood the physical and scientific aspect of what Minister Farrakhan has been teaching the Christian family, the Islamic family, and black people. They have not understood that by the white man being an immoral and unrighteous man by nature, his sperm carries the vibratory sort of unrighteousness and immorality in his seed. And when the white man begin to kidnap our people and insert his seed, which is immoral and unrighteousness, inside of the black woman, he didn't understand, meaning black people, that the black woman's body by nature is receptive, where she would absorb immorality and unrighteousness, and then she would clothe her mind in the spermatory, vibratory pitch of the white man, to where no matter how many children she produced by a black man after the white man admitted his sperm inside of her, all of her children would bear the mark of the peace, which would be immorality, unrighteousness. So now you have a group of black men, you have a group of black women who is perpetuating immorality and unrighteousness. So we're asking the question, well, why is it that the black man has no moral authority? Well, how the hell could he if ain't no black woman produce a black man who's moral? This is what we don't understand. So the Christians never really studied the Bible in regards to the story of Mary and why God gave you the story of the Virgin Mary and how by her being kept away, she was able to produce a righteous seed or a righteous man by the name of Jesus. Some of us call him the Christ who will come back and reform all the people. Not only would he reform all the people, but he would be the standard of morality. He would be the standard of righteousness. But in that him being the standard, he was a sign. Mary was a sign. She was assigned to every black man and black woman that if you stay pure, you stay clean, then you could produce a man who was the standard of morality, who was the standard of righteousness. But that's not what's going on today. The black woman today has not taken Mary as her model. She has taken Oprah as her model. She has taken Beyonce as her model. She has taken all of the loose and the defiled women that the white man has produced and put on TV, put on magazines, put in the newspapers, and they have used them as their standard. They have used them as their model, and now they have literally mimicked their lifestyle to where they have defiled their wombs even more, not just with the sperm of the white man now, but they're defiling their wombs in their mind with the sperm of every man that is on the earth other than the black man. So when the black man gets a hold to the black woman, let's say he is a righteous black man. Let's say he is a morally upright black man. When he inserts his sperm in the womb of the black woman, her mind has already been shaped and molded in immorality and righteousness, because this is the only thing that she has been made herself available to since she's been an existence. So now she's taking a good seed, making a good seed a bad seed. So now the child is growing up fighting his own self, fighting his own nature. Why? Because he has two natures within him. He has the nature of the black man or a righteous black man, but then he also has the nature of an unrighteous man in him as a result of all of the previous sex partners that his mother has engaged in before she came into contact with what we will call a righteous man. This is how this whole thing has started. Black people is going to have to look at this thing from a scientific perspective before they're able to come up with a cure to solve the problem. But Brother James hit it on the head, and we also talked about it on the previous show. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I'm going to say it again, he said separation was more important than prayer. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad understood that if we cannot protect the black woman's mind, we can't protect the black woman's womb. He understood that. So Master Farah Muhammad had hinted to that generation of Muslims who was in his day that the devil would even entertain our families in their home. Well, what was he trying to tell you? He was trying to tell you that this would be the number one way
that our enemy, the enemy of Jesus the Christ, the enemy of God, will begin to take over the minds of our women and the wombs of our women through the television. So if the black man and the black family wanted to become the moral standard and the moral authority again, he had to build up some inner strength of himself, get control of the environment that his woman was in and keep her clean enough to where she can produce a generation of morally upright and righteous children who will then produce another generation to where we now, meaning the black man and black woman, would come together and we would, how can I put this, we would be able to break the poisonous cycle of immorality and righteousness. But this is what I believe that a lot of us, whether we be Christians or Muslims, is overlooking. We're overlooking the scientific destruction that the white man has imparted on the black woman, allowing her and helping her to produce immoral and unrighteous men.
Yes, son. Thank you, Brother Gary. Okay, we have a couple of questions on the line, and I'm going to go ahead and take questions now because I don't want you all to be holding on too long. So, DJ Black Caesar, can we open the mic for area code 314?
As-salamu alaykum.
Walaikum salam. Sir, how are you?
I'm fine. All praise is due to Allah, who indeed came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad.
To yes, give us sir, all Brother Kareem.
Yes, ma'am. Who gave us an example of not who God was, but who God is.
Yes, sir.
And I again want to say, I've been listening. I got in a little late on the program because I was doing some things. However, I see y'all just been rolling along and knocking it out the ballpark, so to speak, again. I mean, it's just fantastic. I think this particular broadcast is even higher than the last one on how the answers are coming. You know, I first want to say that. And,
yes,
and you all have already gone into the answers to, dare I say, my question. I mean, you know, it may have been just a coincidence, you know, that a question was asked and it was beginning to be answered and in the way it's being answered now. And then they, you know, they had technical difficulties. However, I want to, you know, just for those who were not with us last week, I really want to ask the question again. But like I said, you all are already into it. The thing is that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad made some statements, which based upon many of us, you know, because I'm from what, quote, unquote, the first resurrection, that many of us did not have the maturity to understand. You know, so we were looking at it strictly a lot of times from the physical aspect of things. And when we really understand the teachings, we really understand mathematics, understand how the mind of God works. Everything begins in the mind. You know, you can't get it. In other words, what we see out here in the world, in the Quran it says that, and I'm paraphrasing now, but it basically gives us the idea that a true believer, a Muslim, a Christian, that's what you claim to be, truly is one who not only believes in the seen, but also believes in the unseen. And everything that we got out here in the world that we see, including people's behavior and this completely and totally wicked world, which is dying out now, we see started in someone's mind. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad made this statement. Now, our brother, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is such a wise, wise student of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and teacher, because he did exactly what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told him to do. He took the teaching and he put it in the fine language that Allah blessed him with and made statements that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad made palatable to some who wouldn't have been able to take it the way the messenger gave it, because the messenger was raw. The messenger didn't necessarily always take time to think about your feelings. And the two statements I'm talking about are these. The first one is, when the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad made this statement, he said, his words, that the black woman is 75% of the problem. That's how he said it. Now, in immaturity, an individual, quote-unquote, I'm going to say black man, would want to take that and use that as an excuse not to be responsible for himself. The other statement that he made was this one. He said this. He said that the devil's last trick would be his woman. And the majority of us, when we hear that statement, we look at it, we hear it, and the first thing we want to think of is the Caucasian female. We're talking about a physical form. However, when we are conscious, when we've gotten these teachings, when we're up in the mosque, okay, when we're running around and we may have, notice I say read, not study, when we've read the messenger's books, when we've had the lessons and we haven't studied them but read them, we want to look at the physical form of a Caucasian female. But when we're conscious now, she can't get up to us. She can't get next to us. And my thing is, since we've had these teachings for over 80 years now, one would think something is suspect here because if we got supreme wisdom, why can we haven't made more progress? Back to the question. The thing is, since the devil's last trick would be his woman, is it possible? Is it even a thought that it wouldn't be a Caucasian female? It would be our woman with his mind. So even though some of it voluntary, some of it involuntary, that even in this effort, you got somebody that's pulling against you. Some know they are, others don't even know they're fighting against you in this battle we have to raise the dead. So is it possible? And like I say, y'all already started getting into it. And again, I just want to say all praise is due to Allah, because this is a subject that you could do a whole 52-week series on, because indeed it lines up with the time and what must be done. So I'm going to get off here and let y'all continue to just crack these atoms and provide practical solutions to these problems. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, Brother Kareem. Okay. All right. So real quickly, Brother Gary and Brother Troy and Brother James, if you want to chime in, real quickly, so are we the black woman? Are we the woman? Are we the last trick of the white man against the black man? Brother Troy?
I do agree with that brother that you can be a part of a conspiracy and not even know it. You know, a black woman acting with the mind of the white woman. That, it can be looked at that way, but you can also look at it being physical because, you know, if you look on the television today, you see Chloe and Lamar, and you see Kim and Kanye, and you see Ice-T loves Coco. So the white woman is being paraded in front of us physically, and then it takes on a mental approach when our women try to be like them. You know, as we are taught by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his representative, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, we're living in a world, a country, a society that has fallen. It has fallen and is off the path of God. It's off the path of Islam, which means submission to do the will of God. This applies to all houses of worship, as we have all in this society fallen away from the basic principles of Christianity, of Catholicism, the basic principles of Islam. So our society has fallen away from God, and it can be seen in the television, the music, the culture, and the lack of value and respect across the board. So the standard of beauty, 2013, Gwyneth Paltrow was voted the most beautiful woman by U.S. Magazine, you know. Another soap opera star, a Caucasian woman, was voted the sexiest woman in the world by Men's Health Magazine. You know, in the past we've seen Angelina Jolie, Kim Kardashian, Britney Spears, and all of them have been voted the most beautiful, the most sexy. And the problem is that no one, fought against it. Nobody protested it, you know. Nobody raised up our beautiful women, you know. So our beautiful women start trying to take on what they see Kim doing and what they see Britney doing and what they see Angelina Jolie doing. So they start taking on the mindset of the Caucasian woman. While the Caucasian woman, it's funny because she's getting her lips filled with stuff and getting her butt blew up and all this type of stuff, trying to look more and more like our women. So I do think that 75%, he said, of the work was with the woman. And then one of our study guys, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, said that Master Farah Muhammad came for her because he knew if he could get her, that he can get the nation, you know. So I do think that we do have what he termed as leprosy of the mind, white-mindedness, where we take on their way, and it hasn't been productive for us. So I do agree with our brother.
Yes, sir. And Brother Gary, you want to chime in on that?
Yes, I do. I think what the brother stated is an actual fact. Now, some of you might say, well, Brother Gary, what evidence do you got of that? Well, I'll give you a little bit. I heard Minister Farrakhan say one day, quoting him, he said, brother, one day a time will come when you can't do nothing for your woman. And as a result, she will cause for your own destruction, end quote. Now, I want you all to think about that. I want the listening audience and the panelists to think about the statement Minister Farrakhan said. Are you telling me that a time is going to come that is so horrible in America that the black man won't be able to have 5 cents in his pocket to do anything for the black woman or the children she birthed in, to the point she will become so angry and disappointed with him that she will call for his own destruction? This is what Minister Farrakhan said. Yes, this is something the black woman is going to do. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad mentioned that brother's statement in the message to the black man, if you go back toward the end of the book. He said the last trick the white man would use to destroy the black man would be his woman. Well, the question we got to pose is, how has the black woman become his woman? Well, we have to pose the question, whose education has the black woman has in her mind? What love do she have in her heart for? She has a love for the white man's world. She has a love for the white man's money. She has a love for the white man's clothing. She has a love for the white man's society. Everything about this white man, you could look at our women and she is styled and draped and glorified in his thinking and his world. And if that's the case, how can she look like this, be like this, act like this, talk like this, and not be the white man's woman? I want somebody to please express the possibility of that. Now let's go a little bit further. If you go back and study your Bible, the Bible tells you that Pharaoh had an evil plan concerning the children of Israel. He wanted to kill the man, and he wanted to spare the woman. The Holy Quran says the reason why he did this was to make the woman immodest. I think the Bible uses the term treacherous. So I wanted to look up the definition of immodest. I want to break it down for you. Immodest means without shame, lacking shyness, traitor, treacherous, immoral, and etc. So if the black woman has become immodest and all of the attributes that fall under the definition of immodest, I want you to express to me, how has she not become the white man's woman when all of these characteristics that we name is the nature of the white man? Now I'll go a little bit further for the Islamic scholars. If you go and purchase the Al-Bukhari Hadith, Prophet Muhammad said this, may the peace and blessings of Allah be upon him. He said one day he had a vision of hell, and it was filled with mostly ungrateful and disbelieving women, end quote. Now I want you to think about something. We know the judgment wasn't in the days of Prophet Muhammad. So if Prophet Muhammad had a vision, and we know visions are things to come, not things that have passed, then the vision that Prophet Muhammad was shown was in our time. It was in the day of judgment.
and he was warning us of the disposition that the black woman would have toward her own man. And that would be disbelieving in the God who came to save her and reform her, and she would be ungrateful to the man that God had gave her and that he was raising in America to help get her out of her condition. This is a sad thing, sister. I'm sorry, I have to agree with the brother 100%. And if you've been studying the words of Minister Farrakhan and how he keeps talking and keeps hinting about how he cannot get the people up until he gets the woman up. The woman has to be willing to sacrifice that which the white man has offered her so that way she can keep herself clean and pure to produce a generation of children that God can use to usurp, destroy, or replace the white man's world. But our women have not come to do this. So as a result, there's an idea now that is coming to fruition. And that idea is that the children will have to be taken away from the parents, and particularly the women. Some might say, well, Brother Gere, what proof do you have of that? I'll give you the proof if you go study your Bible. Very closely in the book of Exodus, when the older generation was permitted to wander off into the wilderness and die off, and then God took the younger generation to go and take the promised land. That's a part of that prophecy, because the older generation, the men and the women, were too damn weak to just do what God needed them to do, and that was forsake the white man's world and forsake everything that the white man is offering to stay in this world. But this is what I see. I'm sorry. That's just an undeniable fact concerning our women.
Yes, sir. Okay. All right. And Brother James, I don't want to leave you out. Do you want to say something pertaining to Brother Kareem's question?
Well, I'd just like to support Brother Gary in what he stated regarding the removal of parentage and parental authority from the woman and the man, in fact, in the black family, by the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. When he was quoting the scripture, he stated, raise the child up in the way he or she should go, so that when they are grown, they won't depart from it. And then he said, but we are departing from our parents. Children are departing from their parents. Children are not listening to their parents. Children are not listening to the extended parentage of the church or religious institution and the extended parentage or tutelage of the educational and political system. It is because we are not rearing the child up in the way he should go, because we're not in that way ourselves. So you have a very good point, Brother Gary, regarding that. So I just wanted to mention that, as difficult as it is to accept that God would remove children from their parents, and as harsh as that may seem, unless the parents decide to obey God, decide to stand up and be willing to give their lives to establish a society wherein the influence of Satan no longer exists. And make no mistake about it, lives will have to be spent to establish that kind of society. Unless we are willing to subordinate our desire and yes, even our needs of certain material things for the benefit of establishing something of our own that we can live according to the laws, rules, regulations, and statutes of Almighty God Allah, He will separate the parents. And so I just wanted to say those words in support of what you said, Brother Gary. And that really puts it on us. It puts it on the man. It puts it on the woman.
Can I say something to the
kids right there?
Can I say something for the gifted, please, in regards to, I want to speak to the brothers briefly in regards to that, because among us brothers, we have men who have betrayed the black nation. You might say, well, what do you mean by that, Brother Gary? We have men who are helping women stay treacherous and become treacherous. becoming loyal to immorality and unrighteousness. And brothers, there are brothers who are watching and listening to brothers doing this. That has to stop, brothers. We have to unite, and we not only have to expose these kind of individuals, but we have to ostracize them. And we have to urge all of the women who desire righteousness to forsake those kind of men and to forsake those kind of women who want to follow and listen to those kind of men. So that way we can clean ourselves up and produce a generation that Master Farah Muhammad or those of you who are Christians, Jesus Christ can use to bring in a whole new world. Because this is what the problem is. There ain't enough strong men who's willing to stand up against these weak men who is manipulating, deceiving, and beguiling our women to stay in that disposition so they can receive what we will call material perks or sexual gratifications from these women as a result of them keeping them in immorality and unrighteousness. But war has to be declared. I'm sorry, brother. A war is going to have to be declared on the immoral and unrighteous men among us, and they will have to be removed.
Yes, sir. Okay, we're going to take a question from area code 248, and then we're going to move on. So area code 248, your mic is live.
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, sir. What's your name?
Brother Clyde Muhammad from Detroit.
Yes, sir. You have a question for anyone on the panel?
I just have a quick comment. I just want to thank everybody from you, Sister Gidget, to my brother Troy, brother Gary, brother James, brother Kareem. It's always good to hear from you, brother James. As-salamu alaykum. I just want to go quickly from a biblical point of view. If you look at the book of Jeremiah 31:22, it talks about a woman shall compass a man. It goes on to say, how long would thou go about, O thou backsliding daughter? For the Lord has created a new thing in the earth. A woman shall compass a man. It means go around or to encircle. The thought implied here is that a woman shall encircle or go around or rotate around a man. Now remember, this is from a biblical point of view. This is in accordance with the divine order of God. Woman was created from man, and in keeping with the divine order, should give credence to the source of her creation. In accordance with the African tradition, men and women strive to develop a harmonious relationship. This order is not oppressive nor regressive. To respect God's order is to live. To violate that order is to cause chaos. God is giving the woman to man was establishing an order. Woman was made the feminine part of man. So why don't, I'm asking the question, why don't the women encircle or rotate around the man? Well, I asked the question one time, and the answer that I received was, just look at nature, brother. Why does the earth rotate around the sun, which is 93 million miles away? The light of the sun striking the earth causes it to rotate. If there is no light coming from the man to the woman, it is against her very nature to rotate around that man. If there is no light coming from the man, is he really considered a man? Let me answer the question and quote what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said. He said that the black man has been destroyed and the black woman has been corrupted. If that being the case, then we can look at things like on YouTube where, and Troy can bear witness to this, where two women were fighting all the way down to they were basically butt naked, where you had men standing around taking pictures with their phone and put it on YouTube. So as my brother just got through saying, he's absolutely right. We must declare war. We had a situation in Detroit, Michigan a few years ago where a woman jumped off the Belle Isle Bridge, where you had 40 people stand around and watch this big Negro beat her, take her out of her car, and slam her on the hood and chase her till she jumped off the bridge into the Detroit River. And there was men standing there, so-called men, standing there watching, and nobody intervened. So, yes, sir, brother, it is time to declare war. And it must start exactly where you started at, where you stated at, in the house. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you, Brother Clyde. Okay. Wow, such passion. And I can feel that. And, you know, I want to move on because, you know, I want to talk about fathers because, you know, excuse me, we often talk about women in their capacity and when they are adults and when they make the decision and they choose the wrong men and they're influenced by the wrong men. However, I mean, let's just keep it real. You know, oftentimes a child's, a female's violation of her nature often takes place when she's a child. And that violation can be brought to her in many different ways. Sometimes it's just by abandonment. Most times it's just by the absence of the father, you know. And then you have a bitter mother who is trying to raise this child absent of the father. But that child's nature knows. Oh, my goodness, what is that? Okay. Okay, but that child nature knows that there is something wrong with that situation. It just in this in the nature, you know that you're supposed to have a father and a mother. And oftentimes what happened when I'm thinking about this 12-year-old child, she's already having a negative experience at home with her father. By not being protected, by him not having that protective nature to tell her or insist that she covers herself, and he sends her out into the world half-clad. And so when she starts to engage with her peers, her male peers in particularly, who are 9 times out of 10, they don't have a father at home that's guiding them in the right way. So now everybody is running amok. And, you know, with adolescence and everything is going on, I don't have to go into the details of what's going to happen, but usually that first experience is a negative one. And so when you as fathers abandon your children, and I've heard every kind of excuse, the mother won't let me see them, I can't see them because I don't pay child support, whatever. The excuses need to stop because you as a father, you have a moral obligation to that child, especially your girl child who is going to give birth to your legacy. She's going to continue you on in the future. So, you know, I want to talk about the responsibility of the father of daughters. And I'm going to start with you, Minister Troy. What is the responsibility of the father?
I'm sitting there. I'm enjoying the conversation because everybody who has spoken has brought something special to the conversation. You know, I think Brother Gary said it last week when he was talking about the responsibility of men. I mean, we have to stand up. It's like what Brother Clyde was talking about, where a woman was beaten and so scared that she jumped off the bridge. And it was men standing around. They didn't have any feeling to be responsible for that woman, not considering that it was somebody's mother or somebody's sister or somebody's daughter, you know. The minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, teaches us that father is similar to the word further, because it's the father's duty to further the condition and position of his children. He also talked about fatherhood and motherhood, and he talked about how the hood is what's used to cover the head. So part of the father's responsibility is to shield his daughters or his children's heads from the foolishness and mess that we see in the society.
Now, Brother Gary talked about it last week, how the black man has to stand up because she can't be what she's supposed to be if she doesn't have a shield of protection around her. She can't be or she can't grow into the woman that we're saying that we want her to be. She can't be that MGT unless she has men standing up around her, you know, taking control, taking charge, and not letting the enemy in any manner get in and tamper with this beautiful woman. But we haven't been that. Then the minister talks about the Lord's Prayer, Our Father, which art in heaven. And he talks about how, as men, we have the blessing to share that title with God, the title of Father. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Hallowed be thy name. You know, the father must be a caretaker of his daughter. He must be a caretaker in the manner that Zacharias was put or given charge over Mary. So since she had a man with charge over her, she was able to become the woman and the mother that God created her to be. But then you look maybe in the Old Testament and you see an Eve who was approached by the serpent. And when she was approached, Adam wasn't around, you know. So it also speaks towards the presence of a man in the woman's life and how the presence of the man can help the woman become what God wants her to be. It also says, give us this day our daily bread. This goes back to what Brother Clyde mentioned when he talked about the sun giving light to the earth so that the earth can rotate and produce more life. If we don't take care of her, if we don't provide for her, if we don't do all the things that a man was created to do for her, then it opens up the way for any type of evil to be made fair seeming in her life. You know, so as men, as fathers, we have the responsibility to maintain, protect, cover, uphold, you know, and prevent anything from coming in to tamper with our young women.
Yes, sir. And Brother Gary, what's the position of the father today?
Oh, wow. As I was listening to Brother Troy, I was going back and studying everything that I've ever read that Master Farah Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Minister of Farrakhan says, and I'm going to go back further with starting with the man. The man will have to wrestle with the weaknesses of himself, sister. You might say, well, what does this have to do with his daughter? Because the man's weaknesses is the reason why he's having the problems that he's having with the mothers of his children. We are making horrible choices. Our horrible choices is based upon our weaknesses and our lower self, our inability to choose the right woman, to help produce the right child, to help produce the right environment, to where we will be present to raise the best of children, sister. This is what the problem is. The men have to strengthen up. The men have to equip themselves with knowledge and wisdom on how to choose the right woman. And after choosing the right woman, then you don't have to worry about dealing with the enemy and his judicial system. You don't have to worry about a woman trying to deprive you of your God-given right to be a part of your daughter or your son's life. Why? Because she will love God like you love God. And she will see the very valuable importance of you being in your daughter's life. But this is where it starts. We got to become better men. We have to, sister, to choose better women. And after we choose better women, then the men will have to do what Brother Troy was just speaking of, and that is produce an environment where our daughters will go untampered. They will go undefiled by the people, by the society of this world, to where they can grow up and be replicas of the Virgin Mary to help produce another righteous generation that allows the few to produce a holy world. But this is what I think.
Okay, so Brother Gary, let me ask you, because you said something very profound. You said that they have to choose better women. Now, if women, in particularly black women, if they are being corrupted by this system of government, this system of what's been created to be a common domestic situation where 75% of the black households are headed by women, then that experience in itself, not to even mention what trauma she may have faced even in her childhood, when you say he has to choose a better woman, 75% of our women have been damaged by our history in this country. So when a man is choosing a woman, 9 times out of 10, he's going to choose a woman who's already experienced the negative side of a relationship with a man, whether it was with her father or whether it was with a significant other, ex-spouse or whatever. So he has to have some kind of moral fortitude to recapture the essence of God in her. Would you not agree, or do you disagree? Because it's hard to choose a woman who has not been touched by this issue.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly. But the problem is some of these men are choosing women who don't even strive for righteousness like himself. So when you have a woman who don't desire God, who don't desire righteousness, and then you take on that woman, you marry her, you impregnate her, now you're perpetuating the problem. This is what I'm trying to get to. The men don't have the patience to study the woman enough to see if she truly desires God and righteousness. Now, Minister Farrakhan told him, he said, I mean, there ain't no problem that God can't fix when it comes to our women. There ain't no damage. He said, but there is some damage that it takes so much for God to fix that he has instituted certain penalties for that type of damage. But the problem is we have to find women who desire to be worked on, who desire to be fixed, irregardless of certain incidences that might have transpired to cause her to become harmed or even possibly destroyed. So you're right, that the amount of women that we're talking about is very slim, very few. But I'm pretty sure there's a lot of those women who have been destroyed, who desire to be rebuilt, who desire to have a relationship with God. And these are the kind of women that the men have to look for. So Minister Farrakhan said it. He said, brother, the men of this world don't desire a righteous woman. Why would Minister Farrakhan make such a statement? He was hinting to the black man. He was hinting to us that in your heart you truly don't even desire a woman who desires God. Because if you did, you would not be choosing the kind of women that you're choosing, laying up with producing these kind of children who's helping to perpetuate the society of the world that God is coming to destroy. And if he's coming to destroy that world and your children bear the marks of this world, then what does that mean? He's coming to destroy your children and the woman that has helped produce them. So you can't escape it. We have to choose better women, or at least women who desire a new world and the real God.
Yes, sir. Okay, and Brother James, I want to give you opportunity if you wanted to say something about the responsibility of the father.
Thank you, sister. I appreciate it. I think that it was very eloquently addressed by all who spoke. I'll just make 2 points regarding the statement that men need to find a better woman, and also the sanctity, sacredness, and profundity of the relationship of the father with the daughter. I first say that the better woman is found and present in the better man. And until a better man is made, then the woman goes lacking. You know, it's one thing to say, and rather inconsistent to say, that the nature of the woman is to incline towards the man and to follow the man's leadership, and then try to lay on her shoulders the original sin or the responsibility for her condition. She carries, indeed, some responsibility. There's no question about it. But the better woman is found in the better man. The dress. the manner that the women conduct themselves, the seductive and tempting way they present themselves. That's because we as men gave her the message that this is what we want. This is the kind of woman we desire. And as the minister said, the man of this world does not want a virtuous woman. However, when the man is improved, when the man is reformed, then that man will serve as the template of the woman with whom he comes in contact. If a man is a reformed man, you know, I have to say, and he has the opportunity to come in contact with a woman, whatever her condition may be. And as you said, Brother Gary, there is no condition that our women are in that God cannot reform. Well, the reformed man is in fact, or the resurrected man, is in fact God. And there is no woman with whom the resurrected man comes in contact with that he cannot reform, regardless to her condition. And so again, the better man is present and will be found in the better woman will be found and is present in the better man. Now, the father relationship to the daughter, again, is sacred. It's profound, you know, because he serves as the template for his daughter to determine what kind of man she should look for. And this is why it is exceedingly important that if a man is present in the home and a daughter is also present, he has to serve as an excellent example for what a man could be. And this is also on the shoulders of the woman. Because if the woman, for whatever reason, belittles the man, berates the man, and all but emasculates the man for whatever reason, then this is the kind of disrespectful disposition of mind the daughter witnessing this berating, witnessing this emasculation and disrespect of her father, she will have that same predisposition towards any man that she comes in contact with. So first and foremost, the man should not put himself in a position where he can draw that kind of disrespect, that kind of berating. However, the woman must understand that the black man is in fact a destroyed man. And what the enemy has done to the black man over centuries is going to take more than 80 years to correct.
Yes,
what the enemy has done to the black man for centuries has caused a genetic residual. I mean, it is in our genetic makeup now because it's been so inculcated over the years. So the father's relationship with the daughter is exceedingly important. And I would caution all women, no matter how dissatisfied you are with your husband, if he's present and you have daughters there, do the best that you can not to express your dissatisfaction in front of the daughter. And if you can't muster enough respect for the man to keep that at bay, well, then think over the damage that you're doing to your precious daughter who is looking to her father as an example and in actuality will be the example and template she uses to have her disposition, view, and perception of all men. So it's exceedingly important, the relationship. The daughter has such a profound, I can tell you, from experience, the daughter has such profound love for the father. I don't care what condition he's in. If he's present, she has a profound love for the daughter. She really does. The man becomes God to her. I'm telling you from experience. And this, I mean, it's expressed very cheaply, if you will, or very briefly, if you will, in the expression daddy's girl, you know, but or daddy's little girl. But the fact of the matter is the daughter loves the father so much, she will rise up against the mother to hear the mother say something that disturbs or makes the father sad. She will. She will do for the father what the mother won't do. If she doesn't prepare the father's food, she'll say, I'll do it, Daddy. If there's something the father asks the wife to do and she refuses, the daughter, in her profound love, will say, I'll do it, Daddy. And unfortunately, there are many men, too many men, that cannot understand or deal with that kind of love. And so you hear about the incestuous acts of a father on a daughter. And this is what all women must guard against. You know, it literally tears me apart to see these shows wherein mothers, for the desire of the presence of a man, will allow the man to come in, a strange man to come in, and abuse their daughters. And then when the daughter tries to petition the mother to do something about it, so fearful is she of being alone and being uncared for by that man, she will make excuses for him. I want to say to anyone that's listening who may be in that kind of situation, dear sister, whenever a daughter gives any impression that there may be the hint of some impropriety or some kind of abuse, then every man in that household is suspect. You don't trust the father. You don't trust the uncle. You don't trust the son. You don't trust her brother. You don't trust anybody until you get to the bottom of it.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I know that may sound severe, but that's just the absolute truth. I'll stop right there.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I want to talk briefly to the sisters because and the reason why I'm going to take this position because I don't want any sisters to think that our brothers are jumping on you. So I'm going to say it first, and, of course, I'm going to have them weigh in. You know, as much as, you know, men have a responsibility to maintain women, we as women also have a responsibility. And I'm just going to give it to you straight. You cannot walk around looking like a hoochie mama, and that's for a lack of a, not for a better word, but a word that I'm just not going to use on the air. You cannot walk around looking like a hoochie mama and demand respect. Those of you who call yourselves Christians, and I'm also speaking to my Christian ministers, pastors, reverends, whatever you call yourselves, who allow the women to come into the church with their breasts hanging out or with their backsides hanging out or almost hanging out, coming to church in a mini dress, come as you are. That means in spirit, in your spiritual condition. It doesn't mean that you can wear the dress you wore to the strip club the night before to church, because there is a distraction that will take place, that will take the men's mind off of the word of God, and all they're going to look at is that woman. And if you look at the MGT and you look at the structure of the mosque where the women sit on one side and the men sit on the other side, and the form of dress is to prevent that kind of distraction. But what I wanted to speak to was about the respect of women. Women have to first respect themselves. And if you walk outside half naked with your breast hanging out and he calls you out your name, how dare you get offended? You don't have the patent or the right to do so, because you have to first have that love for self and that respect for self. And you have to know yourself. And, you know, we have been saying this for 80-plus years, but we're going to continue to say it until we reach everybody. You pastors who allow this to go on in church, who do not teach from the Bible that you say you believe in Corinthians, it tells you the importance of the covering of a woman. It tells you that a woman uncovered is to be made shameful, but yet you refuse to teach this in your church. And you allow women and little girls to come into your church, have class. And I'm trying to figure out what is the purpose. Is the purpose because you want them to come as you are and you hope they hear the message? Are you trying to stockpile on the collection plate? I'm not getting it. But we have to take the moral responsibility here, y'all, especially for our people, for our little girls. You got babies walking around here looking like grown women. Even when you go to the clothing stores, the attire that they're selling for 2- and 3-year-olds is sexually oriented clothing. And so women have to take their responsibility, and men, you men, who engage these type of women, how dare you lay down with her and then look at her and call her a hoochie? You are a lover of whores if you lay down with her, but you want to get up and call her a name.
Go ahead, sis.
You can't have it both ways. So if you want to be treated like a man, you got to act like a man. And if you love women so much, then love her enough to respect her and tell her to cover her backside, because if men would raise their standards of the type of woman that they require, women would put their clothes on.
If every man
demanded that a woman dress like a nun, all women would be dressed.
But
you constantly engage these women and you wonder why they walk around half naked, because you're gravitating to that.
That's right.
And I've heard the teachers, I heard them say, well, man can't think straight because of a form of a woman and her adornments or so this. That's right, but you black men are God. You have a responsibility to maintain a woman. And when you see a woman out of her character, it is your duty.
Jeez.
To put her in check. So now I'm going to go to Brother Troy.
Go ahead.
I'm going to go to Brother Troy. And I'm going to ask Brother Troy about the responsibility of men. And I'm going to drink me some water. Cool now.
And we got to pour some water on her. She's hot.
Yeah, praise be to Allah.
You could have kept on teaching until you were preaching to the choir. And I think you said everything, and I do want to make it clear that it's not a one-sided message, or it's not one side to blame. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that we're deaf, dumb, and blind, you know. Back earlier we talked about a man choosing the right type of woman, but I think that, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that we have to love our people more than they hate themselves. And I think that we have to see beyond all this mess what God sees in all of us.
That's right.
He sees God in all of us. You know, he sees a reflection of himself as we were created in his image and likeness. You know, but we've taken on certain characteristics from this white man's world that has us acting away from our nature. So the man's responsibility, again, he has to maintain the woman, but he has to get himself lined up. You know, he has to get himself on track. He has to get himself well-studied, you know, and get a vision. Because without vision, the people perish. And right now, our people are perishing. So we have to line ourselves up with vision. It's a few ministers, student ministers of the Nation of Islam on the line, you know, and it's our duty to get out in these streets and give the vision of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, give the vision of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, give the vision of God to our men and to our women. But we become, at this point, brothers and sisters who are in the MGT, we become discipled in this word, you know, so it's not where, you know, we come from a point of, okay, we're saved, because saved is past tense, you know. But this work means you got to keep on working on it daily.
That's right.
We have to take this message out to our people and help them see, you know, as somebody helped us see. So it's not just, okay, you know, the women, you have to be better, or the men,
that's right,
you have to be better.
Come
but
on.
It's a resurrection, and it's a process. And we've been blessed, many of us on this line have been blessed to be pulled out of that nonsense and out of that mess.
That's right.
So that we can see a little bit clearer. So now our responsibility, brothers and sisters, is to go out and try to help our people see a little bit clearer, just like this, what the radio program is about. If anybody's listening, you know, they might take this piece and that piece, but it's enough to make them see a little bit clearer so that we can all work together and get this thing together and on track. So I think we all have a be better today than we were yesterday, and keep working on improvement. As self-improvement, he teaches as a basis for community development.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And Brother Gary, the responsibility of men.
Oh, so that responsibility is a very, very detailed responsibility. That responsibility, like I said before, was to himself, is to strengthen himself in every way of God. He has to strengthen himself in every way of God. He has to choose a woman who will help him to do that, not only with himself, but with the family. And after that woman strengthens her, after that woman helps the man strengthen himself and that family unit, this family unit will have to go out and search out for other individuals like themselves to where they can create a tight-knit community for people striving with all of their might to be morally upright, and to be what we would call right. After the man has done this, then he will have to take what we would call a soldier's-like disposition in protecting that woman, protecting that children, and protecting that community, stopping them from becoming defiled and corrupted and poisoned by all of those who have decided to reject that way of life. And that's something, too, that I wanted to touch on, because we talk about a responsibility. Yeah, we do have a responsibility, but the people have a responsibility to themselves. What will you do when you have a group of people who have rejected righteousness boldly, who have rejected the way of God boldly, and they're arrogant about it, and they're bold about it? Then what do you do? Are you telling me that we still have a responsibility to those type of people? Well, not according to the knowledge that I have. Even God himself has set a time to where those kind of people will be bind together and they will be cast into the depths of hell. So right now, Minister Farrakhan has told us we're in the day of separation. We're in the day where the wicked will be separated from the righteous, from those who desire to do good, who's striving to be good, from those who desire to do other than that. Our responsibility now will be to ourselves. Our responsibility now will be toward those who desire to be righteous and to be upright. And the rest is going to be done away with by God. I'm sorry to say this, but this is true. I'm sorry. We can't avoid this now. We are in the day now where those who don't want to accept personal self-responsibility will be done away with. So that way, those who are left, they will have the job now of securing completely themselves the woman and those children who come from that family unit, so that way the new world of God can come into existence. I'm sorry, but this is true.
Yes, sir. And Brother James, did you want to come in on that?
You know, I had a thought that really just, it just left my mind for some reason as I was listening. Can you, I'm serious. I can be honest with you.
No, I was just reiterating the responsibility of men when it comes to the woman and how she dresses and how he deals with her on that aspect, you know, taking or accepting her in that condition instead of trying to encourage her to change that condition. And the reason why I said that, because oftentimes, the half-dressed woman or the street-walking woman or the stripper-looking woman, whatever you want to title her, she's often used for sexual gratification, but this is still not the same woman that you choose to be your wife. And if she gets pregnant, oftentimes it's by accident, but it's not the woman that you've chosen to bear your seed, but you still engage with this woman. So I was talking about the responsibility that men had in that aspect of dealing with women.
All right, thank you, sister. And you're absolutely right, but then this again attests to the necessity for the man to be raised. Because until you raise the man, until he's resurrected to the position of his original state, which of course is God, is always going to act like that. A man that will use a woman for sexual gratification without the thought in mind of marrying her and demonstrating his worthiness of her, and will not attempt to show her when she's in error and how it is affecting her and the perception of the men and everyone else that she comes in contact with. It's because it's a fallen man. The woman has a responsibility to change change the way she presents herself. There's no question about that. And you've given excellent advice on that matter, dear sister. You know, I know what I wanted to say now, and it's rather humorous. But I was watching the Dave Chappelle show. I'm sure everyone's familiar with him, while he was on. And he did a skit, a comedic skit regarding a woman dressed that way. What he did was he ran up to this person that was dressed like a police officer because he was in need of a policeman's intervention in something that was about to happen to her. And so after, you know, explaining his situation to this person that was dressed as a police or policeman, the person said, "I'm sorry, I'm not really a policeman. I'm just dressed this way." Then he went to the sisters and said, "Sister, take this as an example. You're not a whore. You're not a hoochie mama. You're not a low and immoral woman. But if you dress that way, what are we to think?" And I thought that he gave an excellent and clear and very simplistic or simple message that drove the point home. Sisters, if you don't wish to be regarded that way, if you don't wish to incur the respect from an ignorant man or the disrespect from an ignorant man, then don't present yourself that way. Yes, we have a responsibility to resist you. We do. We have that responsibility. But most of the men that you will encounter have not been reformed to the degree that we want to resist that. So don't present. Just don't present yourself that way. You may feel it's oppressive. You may feel it's suppressive. And to some degree it is suppressive. Not to suppress you as a human being that is unequaled. And not to suppress you as one who has the right and the freedom to express themselves. But we have to suppress that which you would emanate and represent that will bring harm to you, either physically or mentally and spiritually, based on how you present yourself. Help us out, sisters. Don't put that burden on us, even if we have the responsibility to be able to resist. Help us along. Lower the hem of your garment. Loosen the fit of your garment. Don't show us your breast. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that men have a natural inclination toward the breast, knowing that that was our first source of nourishment. So we have a natural leaning or inclination or attraction to the breast. So don't show it. Don't let someone convince you that you should have and show your cleavage.
Yes, sir.
Don't do that. You know, help us along, dear sisters. We want to respect you. We want to protect you. And I'll close on this note with a bit of history. You know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan shared with us that under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, it was reported that a Muslim sister was raped. And, of course, the FOI was up in arms, ready to kill anything that looked like they might have thought about doing something like that. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad asked the question first.
Yes, sir, he did.
What time was she out? What did she have on?
Have on, that's right.
How was she dressed? I remember under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, sisters were not allowed to be out in the street or in the public at nightfall. By nightfall, they had to be in the house. I remember that. I remember it so clearly because I was I had come out of a train station and night was about to fall as I was on my way somewhere, and a sister, I mean, this MGT, and you could tell she was an MGT because she was dressed as such, she was flying through the street to the subway. And when she saw me, and I was dressed as an FOI in my Class A, she didn't know me, never met the sister, but she raised her hand and her voice and said, "Brother, I am on my way home. I'm on my way. So help me Allah."
Yes,
so
sir.
Help me Allah. This is the kind of respect that women had for the FOI, the MGT had for the FOI. She didn't know me, and I had just come in the nation. There was another incident or another situation wherein I just got my ex and I had walked into the mosque, an area in the mosque where the sisters were socializing or, you know, talking with each other. And this wasn't an area that I couldn't be in as an FOI, but it just so happened that they were there. And no FOI were there. And they were laughing with each other and, you know, just socializing. And as soon as I walked in, I had no rank. My name was James 2C48X, meaning that I was the 248th James to become registered at Mark number 7. So you know I didn't have any rank. But as soon as they saw me, they literally got in order. I mean, they Sister Gidget, they jump scared me. They jumped in order. Silence immediately fell upon them, and they began to get themselves together. They didn't even want me to see them laughing and joking and demonstrating any kind of looseness or lack of discipline whatsoever.
That's right.
That was because the FOI at that time did have supreme moral authority. And
that's
let me say this. When a woman treats a man like that, that man will go out and move mountains for her. I mean, I felt like I could conquer the world. I literally did. I thought I was the baddest thing since sliced bread. That's how good. I'm serious. That's how good they made me feel, literally. So, yes, dear sisters, and it takes nothing from me. I know you don't want to come under the control of a foolish man or a man that has not demonstrated that he's worthy of you submitting yourself to his control. But I tell you, dear sister, if you can treat your man, I'm talking about the one you got right now that you're dissatisfied with, the one you think that you can replace with someone better, and all you're going to get is the other half of of the madness of the one that you left. But that man that you're dissatisfied with, that man that you're disappointed with, you can change him. You have that power. Treat him as the God you want him to be, and he'll rise to the occasion. It may not be overnight, but treat him that way, even if he doesn't deserve it. Treat him that way, and he will eventually rise to the occasion of the standard that you, with your womanly ways, impose upon him. Now that's all I want to say. I hope it is received in the manner in which I intended to express it.
Yes, sir.
Assalamu alaikum.
And you know, wa alaikum salam, and thank you, Brother James. And we wind it down to the last 10 minutes, but I can bear witness to what Brother James is saying, because I know I had an altercation with the police. And Southwest Regional Student Minister Roberts sent the FOI to come and get me, and they had to call him on the phone to report to him that I was dressed properly, because I guess if I wasn't dressed, they were going to leave me where I was. I don't know, but I'm glad I was dressed properly. Okay, listen, we winding down, but I want people to understand, Brother Gary and Brother Troy, you know, we often say that the devil will come into our living room, and I know a lot of our Christian audience may not be aware of that, and of course it is not in the doctrine of what most Christian theologians teach. And so I want you, if you would, to elaborate on that, because that is so very important, since a lot of children are raised in front of the television, or a lot of children have access to media that is not favorable to their age, and certainly not favorable to the impression that they should leave on a child. So we're going to expound on that before we end our broadcast. So, Minister Troy, could you give an example or tell us how the effects of media and entertainment is affecting not only the children, but the grown people in our society today?
Well, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan has warned us all, and he's continuing to warn us in the time and what must be done, that the enemy of God is after the righteous and after those trying to be and do right. And he has taught us how the entertainment industry promotes acts and artists that go against God, and that they even ask some artists to become more seductive or more dirty in order to be successful in his world. And then this filth is promoted and spread across television and airways, contributing to a society and making it now neck deep in filth. The examples put before the world, sex in movies, sex-filled lyrics filling the minds of the people, and as we are taught in the biblical scripture, as a man thinketh or as a woman thinketh, so is she and so is he. So the society now, based upon what we're being fed from the entertainment industry, is now a reflection of filth and degenerate behavior. Now, how can we come out of this? Minister Farrakhan reminds us in the scripture, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive them their sin and heal their land. You know, this is the devil's world. Make no doubt about it. And as our brother said earlier, separation is what's being asked for or of us. And that's total separation. And that's separation from his way, his society, his entertainment, because it all has an effect on us, and it's affecting us in the wrong way. So during this time, we have to submit ourselves to God. We have to, if you're in the church, submit yourself to God. Line yourself up with the scriptures. If you're in the mosque, line yourself up with the Quran and the words of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. And to our sisters specifically, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan asks us to make Allah sufficient. Don't consider anything else. Just make Allah sufficient. And if you can do that, he'll bless you in so many ways and bring you out of whatever condition you're in. You may not understand why a conversation is being held about how you dress. And you may think your dress is just fine. Let's try to line ourselves up with the way of God and try his way and see how he blesses us with success like we've never had.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Troy. And Brother Gary?
How can I work this? You know, there's an old saying goes that an idle mind is a devil's workshop. And then there's another saying that we are what we eat. Well, if you put those two together, how can you expect your children to maintain righteousness, the moral, how can I put it, correctness, if everything they're hearing and watching on the TV is contrary to that, contrary to what we're being taught in the church, contrary to what we're being taught in the mosque, and contrary to what God is demanding of the people in the day of judgment? Many of the people do not understand, once again, the scientific aspect of the brain and the cell. We do not understand that the cell is composed of what is called a crystalloptic matter. It is a matter that receives what is called vibration, sound, pitches, voices, information. It absorbs it. So whatever goes into a child's eardrum, whatever is absorbed through the child's eyes or through the child's nose or through the child's cells of the body, it is literally encoded into these crystalloptic cells in the DNA, awaiting to a specific point in time to be released. Most times this information is released at a time of stress, pressure, pain, or contemplation. So when a child enters a situation like this, all of the information that has been encoded from them watching the television, listening to the radio, is released, giving the child a suggestion in the mind that is contrary to righteousness. We do not understand that we ourselves are playing a part in the destruction and the behavior of our own children by permitting them to be entertained daily by the television, which is being controlled by the enemy of God. So if the parents, the mothers, and the fathers desire to see better behavior, to see better children, we have to take total control of the environment and the things that our children are exposed to, whether it be through the sight, airways, and the food, because all of them is programming our children with that and to go contrary to God. But this is what I see.
Yes, sir. Okay, and Brother James, do you have a comment about that? I think we lost Brother Troy. I don't see him. Hold on. Okay, Brother James, did you have a comment you wanted to make about that?
Actually, sister, I was occupied when that conversation was going on with my granddaughter, as a matter of fact.
At connection. To disconnect, press 1. To record your
message. Okay. I think we lost Brother Troy, but before we go, because we have about one more minute, you know, I thank you, Brother Gary, for your comment, because that is so very important. I just want to encourage our parents to spend time with your daughters and particularly with your children. Please stop letting this media raise your children. It is in the music.
Right.
It is in the television broadcast. It is in the video games that they play. Family quality time is so very essential now. You know, sit around after dinner and discuss, you know, scripture, whatever your faith is, or just discuss something positive. But you as a parent have the responsibility to be the biggest influence in your child's life. And if you would extract the foolishness from your minds, then that would be a reflection and an impression that you leave on your child for them to grasp for something better. And that is the only way that we're going to turn this around. We have a duty and responsibility to our God. We have a duty and responsibility to ourselves and certainly what we bring into this world. So I pray that everything that we shared here tonight was beneficial to everyone who was listening. I so very much thank all of you who gathered and bunched up in the chat room. I want to thank my engineer, DJ Black Caesar, and I especially want to extend a big thank you to student minister Troy Muhammad from our historical mosque in Detroit, Michigan, No. 1. We lost him at the end, but he knows that we love him and we appreciate him. And, of course, my adorable little brother Gary, thank you, sir, for being such a profound scholar. And my beloved brother, minister, and friend, Minister James Muhammad out of Tampa, Florida, thank you for always being here, always having my back. And Brother Kareem, thank you for your constant love and support. And I want to give a shout-out to my friend, Milton. I see you out there. I ain't going to open your mic, but I see you out there, my dear friend, for over 30 years. Thank you for your love and support. And I leave you as I came before you in our greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum, one nation, one love.
Sister Gidget,
yes.
before we close out, since I'm sorry to have interrupted your greeting, but I did get a text from Brother Troy that his phone died. And also, if I may, I wanted to announce tomorrow's show, especially
yes.
since it relates so closely to the subject matter that was discussed this evening. We're going to be blessed on the show, put on the new man, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, same station rather, and 8 o'clock Central Time, with 4 of the students in the ministry of the Nation of Islam who are black women. We're going to hear from them, and I'm sure they're going to touch on some of what we discussed this evening, but it's going to be a wonderful treat to hear from the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan being expressed from the student ministers of the Nation of Islam who are female. Sister Fatima, Sister Denise, Sister Lachelle, and who else, Sister Gidget?
I can't can't think of her name. She's going to hurt us bad. But I know, I think they're supposed to be joined by Sister Nisa as well, who has done a profound work in marriage workshops and has counseled many couples along with myself throughout the Nation of Islam. So please tune in to that show tomorrow, especially for you sisters who have young daughters. It is very... excuse me, important that they hear who they are in the eyes of God. And, you know, this will help them in some of the challenges that they face in their growth and in development. So please join us for that tomorrow. And I'm sorry I didn't give the lineup for the shows, but those of you who follow us and follow me on Facebook, I will give you a detailed schedule. We are so out of time, we run over our extra time. So, So thank you all so very much for listening. I love you all and I appreciate
love
you all.
You
and
too,
again,
sis.
Thank you, Brother James. And we lost Brother Gary and Brother Troy, but I love you all. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum. One Nation, One Love. Good night.
Walaikum salam.